You know, I was asked once in Temple on Yom Kippur to talk about the sources of my Jewish identity. And I said that that it wasn't the food, it wasn't the brisket, it wasn't the smells that, you know, other people think of as being representative of Judaism, that I got my sense of being a Jew at Mount Sinai, which is where we all got it. And I think some of us have forgotten that that's where it comes from, that it's not about the parties and the events and that kind of stuff. It's, when did we connect with God? It was really at Mount Sinai. That's where we were given the law. So I remember saying that, but the food doesn't hurt. It makes it a lot, it like adds to the fun, adds to the wonderfulness.
Hi, and welcome back to the third installment of the High Holiday Edition of Pandemics. This week, we speak to Rick Zakalik, the Executive Director of the Jewish Community Center, and we hear about some of his favorite High Holiday memories. Rick, thank you for being here.
You are obviously very involved with the Buffalo Jewish community. Can you talk a bit about your progression to how you got to where you are now and what you're currently doing now?
I got involved with the Jewish community about 40 years ago. And I was in my 20s and I was a young stockbroker and I wanted to meet people in the community. And I had a pretty good Jewish background. In college, I was involved in Jewish stuff and in the beginning of the Russian resettlement, or I'm not resettlement, but Russian exodus movement, or the Soviet Union wouldn't let Jews out. And I got involved there. And then I met with somebody from Federation who led me to a description of different agencies. And I started out with Jewish Family Service, ultimately came on their board. And then by the time I was about 30 years old or 31 years old, I was president of JFS. And at about the same time or a couple of years after that, I led the United Jewish Fund campaign. And we had the biggest campaign the community's ever had. We raised about $5 million in that between Operation Exodus and the regular campaign. And let's see, what did I do after that? I was on the board of the Foundation for Jewish Philanthropy. I was on the Kadima board. I won all the community's big awards. And after a long career as a stockbroker, and I ran an office for Dean Witter, which is now Morgan Stanley, and then owning my own business, which was FWS. I sold that, and I was drafted to run the JCC, so I'm the executive director of the JCC. So I've been very involved in the Jewish community, both as a volunteer and as a professional.
And what would you say your favorite part of your involvement has been over the years?
Well, running the JCC has been pretty interesting and pretty exciting, but I've got to say that the time that I really enjoyed the most was working with Russian refugees, the people who came out of the Soviet Union, and befriending people in that community and helping them get settled and helping them get jobs. And doing that kind of work was probably the most satisfying of all the work that I've done. But you know, I chaired the investment committee for the Foundation for Jewish Philanthropies, which fit in with my experience as a stockbroker, and that was always that's probably the most interesting stuff. And the most demanding has been as a professional, as an executive director, that's been pretty tough. I was also involved in Kadima, and we built that great, big, beautiful building for Kadima. Unfortunately, it didn't work out, but we did raise $5 million and build a building that was paid for. So there have been a lot of things, but I think the most personally satisfying is working with refugees.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've also, I'm sure, with your work with the JCC in just the past recent months with COVID, you've probably experienced a bunch of new challenges there. What has been like the biggest challenge with navigating, directing the JCC and also having to deal with COVID?
All of the uncertainty that has followed the spread of the COVID virus. So, you know, when we shut down in March, we thought it would be for 2 weeks. And then, oh my God, it's going to go for another month. And then it went for 5 more months. And even now, I mean, we just reopened fully yesterday. It's not even really fully, but we reopened. And so we've got a few people trickling back in, and we've had to develop a whole portfolio of virtual events and classes and groups in fitness and in cultural arts and in theater. We've got a virtual season coming up on the, for the Jewish Repertory Theater. And that whole thing has been big. And then dealing with staff and with the uncertainty and with the financial aspect of getting through it with very large deficits generated by ongoing expenses and diminished revenue. It's been a real business challenge getting it done, but I think we're going to come out of it okay. We're going to need help from the community, but we're going to be okay. But it's really been a stressful and tough period. The good news is we've got a great staff who's been just incredibly creative and smart, and they figured it out. And our members are very, the members have been cooperative and generous, and most of them have continued to pay their membership dues. So that's allowed us to pay staff, and it's allowed us to, pay the rent and not the rent, but the utilities and the occupancy expenses. So that's been a tough one to manage.
Yeah, no, I can't even imagine. If you have one takeaway from just dealing with the coronavirus, what would be your main takeaway in like a business and JCC kind of perspective?
You've got to be flexible. You can't predict what's going to happen. Somebody once told me, and this comes from a guy named Samuelson, who wrote an economics textbook, and he was a very famous economist, and he said, there are two kinds of prognosticators. There are those who don't know and those who don't know that they don't know. And I've come to learn that I don't know, and you just never know what's going to happen in life. My dad used to say to me, save your money, tough times are coming. And you just don't know what's going to happen. And this coronavirus thing is, it shocked everybody. Some of us had a little bit of insight as to what it could be. In fact, my older son, Sam, predicted in February, said, we're not going to be in seeing you. We're not going to be traveling. It's going to be incredible. And he does a lot of statistical work, and he majored in math and economics. And we thought he was crazy. And his wife, who's a doctor, said, Sam, you don't know what you're talking about. But he did know what he was talking about. And it was really true. So you've got to keep an open mind. You've got to be flexible. And you've got to realize you just don't know. The world changes, and the world is very dynamic, and you have to be ready for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now transitioning a bit from those general questions to those about food. So food and Judaism are pretty interconnected. Do you have a favorite memory of Jewish cooking?
I do. For many years, I worked with my Aunt Yetta, who, of blessed memory, she died about a year ago. But for a bunch of years, she would come over to our house, and we would make stuffed cabbage. She called it, and we called it prachis. It was the Jewish version of stuffed cabbage. And so we have a Passover kitchen in our basement. It's a nice and big kitchen, and it was an all-day event, and it was a lot of work. But we would make hundreds of stuffed cabbages, small ones that would accompany our usual feast. And we had a lot of fun. So one year we got her a chef's. She was a little lady, and we got her a chef's hat and a white jacket. And we took a lot of pictures. But her stuffed cabbage recipe and the way she made it, which I can do it. I miss doing it with her, but it's like one of the best things you've ever eaten in your life. It's sweet and sour. It's tomato based, and there's no rice, and it's a real. It's a real Sokolivka recipe. At least she was a Sokolivka, so like you are. working with her for the day, making hundreds of them, and then we would dole out packages of them, and she used to deliver them, some of them, to friends of hers who couldn't get out and get stuff themselves. And these were people who were in their late 80s and 90s, and she was still going in her 80s and delivering, and we'd share it with family. And it was really, people looked forward to it every year because it was really, really outstanding. She would make it. So first of all, there was no rice. She would make a meatloaf kind of mixture of kosher chopped beef and some onions and some little bit of matzo meal, egg. I'm thinking about it. She would say, however you make meatloaf, that's how you do it. And then the cabbage, you'd freeze it for about a week and then thaw it out, and then it would wilt, and you have to cut the leaves off, and you've got to be really adept at wrapping them tightly and neatly, and then they have to be lined up exactly perfectly in the pan that they go in. And you would alternate a mixture of tomato puree and tomato paste mixed together, and you had to mix it together with the right wooden spoon. And white raisins, brown sugar, sour salt, and then the pieces of the cabbage that got trimmed off, you'd put those around. And you also put in flank meat that was parboiled previously, and you got off most of the fat. And so you put these pieces of flank meat around, and then do another layer and repeat the process. And you had to do it into a bunch of pans, and you'd only go at most three high, but probably two high. And you had a bunch of pans going in and out of the oven, and it would bake. And you had to shuckle the pan a certain way, the way Aunt Yetta did it, you know, from left to right and left to right, so they didn't fall apart. There were no toothpicks in there, but she was an amazing roller of the stuffed cabbage, of the prachas. And they would be tight and perfect and neat. And I tried to do that, and I got better at it over the years. And sometimes my wife Karen would help, and she was good at rolling them too. But you had to put in just the right amount of meat. And if you made a mistake, you'd get scolded by Aunt Yetta. You know, she'd straighten you out. And then when they were finished and it browned a little bit and it was cooked enough and you kept tasting it, when it was done, it was just amazing. And it was always better when it got reheated and it had been sitting in the refrigerator for a while.
Tell me more about this stuffed cabbage recipe. Was this a High Holidays recipe? When would you make it?
Twice a year. And then we always had a lot of it in the freezer. So during the year, you'd take some out once in a while and eat it. But the two big holidays that it was for was Rosh Hashanah. That was the big one. And then at Pesach, she would do a, you know, kosher for Passover version. And we had that. So those were really, really strong memories. And all of our family just, you know, we talk about it. And everybody tries to do it exactly like Aunt Yetta did it. I'm really the only one who worked with the master chef, Aunt Yetta. And, I sort of mastered it with her. And it is really, I've never met anybody who tasted it and said they've ever had better stuffed cabbage.
What was the highlight of making this meal?
Having fun working with her. And you know, while we were doing that, and there'd be family stories, and there'd be, you know, just the fun of working with my aunt. That was the fun. And then the product that was finished, you know, the food is love, or it can be. And so the love that we had for her and she had for us would really come through in the stuffed cabbage, if that's possible. That was the best part of it. And then, you know, tasting it. And I remember one year eating so much of it that I had to lie on my back on the floor. my stomach was so distended. So I never did that again. But they were really amazing. And then the pieces of the flank meat in there, that she would save the best ones for the right people. And, you know, that was absolutely the best part of it. And I always got one of the good pieces.
So those are all the questions I have for you. Is there anything else that you'd like to add before we go?
So I'll just teach everybody the new Yiddish word if they haven't heard it, and that's oisgezumt, which means you're sort of fed up with Zoom and you've had enough of it. So it's a great Yiddishism, an oisgezumt, to be oisgezumt. And then I would just wish everybody a Shana Tova, a happy and a healthy year and a safe year, and to encourage them to come back to the JCC to keep supporting us at the JCC, and take care of your families and send them your love, and, you know, make some extra collars, and you can send them in the mail if we still have a mail service, and connect with them in that way. And next year will be a better year. And maybe it'll be in Jerusalem, or even if it's in Buffalo, as long as we're able to be together and still healthy and still all here, it'll be great.
Rick, thank you so much again. It was so lovely speaking with you. Everybody, thank you so much for listening.